Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I'm privileged to welcome a multi-talented individual from San Francisco, California, Pallav Sharda, to our show. Pallav, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Pallav is a digital health products and commercialization leader. He has worked with Google X, the Moonshot Factory. He's a physician, a teacher, an author, an entrepreneur, and a corporate leader, which is why I said he's very, very multi-talented. And as I said, he's an MBBS and an MBA. So, Pallav, tell me, what would you say are three key milestones in your career or your life?
Well, thank you for having me here, Ashutosh. And it's a privilege to be part of TBCY. Three key milestones. So chronologically, I think when I look back at my career, the first one was successfully exiting medicine. Mm-hmm. And at that time, it was a very singular focus on trying to be a physician and serve patient needs. But having been able to exit that and create another career in technology was one of the key milestones. Later on, you know, around 2010, I had started thinking of creating a business. Mm-hmm. So exiting a full paying job and starting my own business was another key milestone. It's very disorienting to leave what seems like a certain lifestyle and certain stability to go into the unknown. So that was probably another milestone mentally and socially and financially. And the third was quite personal to writing a book. So being able to synthesize what you have experienced and create an output that you can stand by, because, you know, once you've written it, everybody's out there, they can take a hard look at it. And being able to do that over the course of 2 years was certainly an intellectual milestone. Mm-hmm. So those are my three.
Fantastic. And I'm going to ask you a question which I'm sure you've been asked thousands of times. What made you give up medicine for a career in the corporate world and later on as an entrepreneur?
Yeah. I've been asked that often by somebody who's also looking for career advice. And, you know, that mm-hmm. gives me trepidations because, you know, looking back, it's easy to say why you did something. Mm-hmm. But at the point that you're doing it, everyone is just as anxious about whether it's going to work out or not. Mm-hmm. So when I think about leaving medicine for a technical career, I think it was a push and a pull. So to be completely honest, where I was when I was thinking about not pursuing medicine anymore, I was in some level being pushed away from medicine because I don't know if others have told you this, but you do so much to get into medical school, and then you realize that you're in, perhaps because the bar has been raised, you realize that you're amongst tough competition intellectually, and the human body itself is just so complicated that, you know, it takes a lot to be a master of what's going on, why, and that sort of the irony of self-actualization just got to me, where my patients, I remember taking care of patients as a fourth, fifth year student, sometimes in the hospital, and they look at you with the expectation of an expert, and here you are learning, and all the hopes, and like you tell yourself, no, it's going to work out, like inserting a Foley catheter into some, you know, a young individual who's in pain, and this is your second time doing it. There's a certain sort of internal battle that rages. Well, am I good enough? You know, am I going to do this correctly? And that was like my centrifugal force from medicine, because I felt like I wasn't completely an expert in what I was expected to be an mm-hmm. expert in. And if I look back, I should have just, like, if I, you know, like everybody else, if I hung on, like I would have gotten those skills. But the initial irony of it was mm-hmm. too much for me. Mm-hmm. So I was looking outwards. And the pull was always from technology. I had always been tinkering on the side with computers, sometimes with games, sometimes with programming. And it gave me the sort of rare combination of creativity plus control. So something that kind of you lack in medicine is control, because even though you think you understand the biomedical nature and therapeutic nature of what you're doing, human body is basically a complicated system and things can go south for apparently no reason. And technology was the opposite, right? If you have an error in your code and you fix it, it works. So there was that pull from a creative science that was gave me much more control. And I can't really say that it was very well planned. It happened to be the thing that I was really interested in and wanted to explore and just kept pulling on that thread.
Very, very interesting. So Pallav, let's now move to talking about your current avatar of as a digital health products and commercialization leader. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the kind of work you are doing now.
I act as a sort of a convergence agent between business leaders, technology leaders, and clinical leaders. So if there's a large hospital system or a healthcare insurance company, they want to know how they can use Google Cloud to transform the way they take care of patients or their business processes. And luckily, I've been in all three worlds, so technology, clinical, and business. And I help to sort of make each party help each party make the right choice. I jokingly call myself the choice architect, because it's not enough for the business to know what they want to do. It's also Google as a technology vendor should know what they can affect at a certain level. So it's this constant translation between three different circles of clinical intentions, business intentions, and technology capabilities. So trying to converge those three circles for everybody's benefits. That's what I do.
Wonderful. And, let's talk a little bit about the Moonshot Factory. Talk about 10x impact on the world's most intractable problems. So first tell me, what is, for our thousands of our listeners, what is the Moonshot Factory? And what are some of the problems which are such intractable problems in healthcare?
Sure. So Google, as you know, is a well-known brand. And the founders of Google adopted a holding structure. I think it was in 2016. Mm-hmm. And when that became Alphabet, which is the holding company, which has several subsidiaries within it. Mm-hmm. And you might have heard of Waymo, which is the self-driving car, or Loon, which is the balloon internet delivery. So there are several such companies underneath Alphabet. And one of the companies is basically an R&D shop, and that's called X. And X, they call it the Moonshot Factory because the goal is to look at planet scale problems, problems that take decades to solve, problems that you wouldn't attempt from a commercial purpose necessarily, and problems that affect billions of people. So for example, waste. If you, I don't know if you've come across statistics like this, but 40% of what we grow on this planet goes to waste.
Okay.
In fact, that, COVID is pretty prominent these days, 50% of vaccine, even before COVID times, goes waste. And that's actually like the privilege of having the modern life is actually built on this incredible amount of waste that we sit on, where every manufacturer or service delivery vendor is doing more than 100% of output just to make sure things reach to you in time. So if you're ordering something from Amazon, if you order a book, it's not that they just print one book. They've already printed 100 books and stored them near your facility, near your address, predicting through machine learning and whatnot. But the fact that there are hundreds and thousands of books already printed, waiting to be ordered, means that we've already cut down some trees, printed paper. So how do you create a true awareness, visibility in every industry, auto, manufacturing, healthcare, so that we produce less and we consume what we only have ordered for. Mm-hmm. So that's like one example. Okay. There are other examples which are like public projects. You can go to x.company to look at them, but mm-hmm. how to deliver internet using light beams. So usually we wire things up, and that's mm-hmm. not easy to do in a developing country mm-hmm. where you might not have the infrastructure to physically wire one end of a location to another end. So mm-hmm. beaming information using light beams is actually a project in production in South America, I think, or Africa. I forget the country, but okay. but you can look at it as a project on X website. So those are some of the problems, like looking at fundamental breakthroughs in either physics or science and trying to apply them on four technologies, four problems that affect the whole planet.
Okay. And, you know, when you look at healthcare, how do you see technology, you know, supporting healthcare products, first in the developed world and second in the developing world?
Yeah, how much time do we have? No, obviously, I mean, there's so much to be said about that. But, you know, I think what I'll pick is like one thing about both and something that's in common too. So for developed world, the usual healthcare transactions are kind of consistent. So if you, for example, take your child for getting immunization, you're not going to get much variation no matter which mm. part of the developed world you go into.
Correct.
It's not the same in developing countries. So I feel like technology can help scale healthcare in the right way for the developed world. Mm. For example, in the same immunization example, every state in US by law has an immunization registry. So no matter where you go in California, if there's a pediatrician that gives your child a vaccination, mm. that information through their technology, their patient record, electronic patient record, is sent to the state. Mm. So the state can make public health decisions based on a very accurate picture of who got immunized with what. Mm. So if you think about it, that's a public health insight that has scaled to the population of like 40 million in California. Mm. And that enables you to do fundamental, you know, progress in healthcare. So I feel like scale is truly what can be affected with technology in developed world. Mm-hmm. In developing world, not that scale can't be reached, but I feel like just because they're at a different point in their healthcare journey, when I was part of the, for example, Indian healthcare system, mm-hmm. It wasn't that networked. It wasn't that collaborative.
Right.
So I feel like technology has fundamentally and can fundamentally make healthcare more collaborative in developed world. And I'll give you an example. If you, God forbid, were looking at a health condition that you wanted to get resolved, mm-hmm. your primary care doctor could then give your hand over your case to a cardiologist who could send you to a lab and who could send you to to another specialist and then come back to your primary care physician. Mm-hmm. Although a lot of it is just probably based on WhatsApp today, mm-hmm. but it is still technology, and you know, for all I know, there is probably an Indian startup that is using WhatsApp as an electronic medical record, mm-hmm. and enabling a collaborative team to take care of a patient. But this collaboration didn't exist when I was in India 20 years ago, mm-hmm. and I think this fundamental collaboration means progress, because you don't have, as a patient, you're not bouncing around the system just mm-hmm. doing the same thing over and over again. Mm-hmm. So that is like the trajectory. Although those are two different things in developing country, I think both parts of the world, developed and developing, are suffering from one side effect of technology is information overload. Mm. And I think equally in both parts of the world, we see, and this is so counterintuitive, because when I started programming and I was looking at the web and I was genuinely excited about a time where you can just get an answer to whatever problem you were thinking about, mm-hmm. I wasn't thinking that it's going to counterintuitively make it harder to give people the right therapeutic intervention. Mm-hmm. Right now, you know, Dr. Google or Dr. Internet, is something that is not truly helping us. So there's like a, it's like a double-edged sword where yes, you get, you can find a community of support as a patient online, but we're also not really helping each other by the lack of authoritative information overshadowing the true information. So I think that one affects both developing and a developed country, but it's technology in the end. And hopefully, just like Wikipedia, we can, you know, slowly have the positive side overshadow the negative side.
Very interesting. So, you know, let's move on and talk a little bit about your book. Tell me about the book. What is the subject and what made you write it?
Sure. So the book is called Before Disrupting Healthcare. And I was, you know, I'm not an accomplished author like you. It was my first sort of catharsis. And it came from a time where I was just staying up late at night during my startup days and basically answering questions that people had asked about healthcare technology and how to build, say, electronic medical records. And I came to the realization that a lot of times my friends who are not in healthcare but are technologists are looking at healthcare with the same lenses that they were looking at some other problem. So, you know, famously speaking, you know, if once Uber got famous, everybody wanted to create an Uber for X in healthcare, like Uber for a nurse. You know, you can call your medications geared. And I had this epiphany where I felt like, yes, everybody's talking about disrupting healthcare, but can I just take a moment and tell you what already exists in terms of technology so that before you disrupt healthcare, you know what you're walking into? Because just like wearable technology, you know, you remember Google Glasses or the Apple Watch, they are incredible pieces of technology, but something about wearing computing or something about putting technology in healthcare, there's an X factor which can destroy the initial mission and not, you know, not make you successful. So the book was intended to be a guide to what already exists in healthcare in terms of technology. So I talk about electronic medical records. I talk about what your clinician types into when you go see them and they're, you know, turned away from you and typing into the computer. What are those systems? How do they put in an electronic prescription? Where does that prescription go? Because I think if I could tell the curious minds what already exists, then maybe they'll be more informed on how to change it for the future. And I, generally speaking, don't like the word disrupt, because I think compassionate progress is working with the system rather than blowing up the system.
Correct.
Because there's a reason why the system is like what it is. Now, you know, I don't apply it to everything. Like if you're talking about negative systems, let's blow them up by all means. But
absolutely,
healthcare has formed because of cultural, faith-based norms. And I wanted that message to be in the book. But basically, the book is an information catalog for what exists in healthcare and what is upcoming. And it's already at this point 4 years old, so I probably need to refresh it at some near point.
Fair enough. So now let's move to the last segment of our conversation, which is some questions for you personally. My first question to you is that, you know, you're doing some amazing cutting edge technology work with a medical background. What are some of the core values you believe in?
I think I believe in knowledge as a core value. I feel like wherever you are on that spectrum of data to information to knowledge to wisdom, trying to inform yourself is fundamentally a value that that everyone should have. So this pursuit of knowledge, learning new things, is one. I think the other thing that I believe in is having an awareness for community, the common good. I feel like we're in this large scale sort of game theory prisoner's dilemma where we're, if we keep thinking about how it benefits us or like our little bubble, we're going to lose out. And you can see it in terms of like global warming or generally speaking, how we're destroying the planet by not thinking together as one. Mm-hmm. And you can recursively think about like that in any sphere, like, you know, in healthcare, you know, we open hospitals that are catering to a particular type of population, whether mm-hmm. it's rich or, you know, I would think that every time you do that, you should dedicate a certain percentage of your bandwidth to everybody, which is essentially what emergency rooms are, but they are also like commercial at this point. So mm-hmm. I feel like believing in a certain part of what you do should go to common good, whether it's probably just sweeping the road behind your house or trying not to throw your trash in front of your house because, you know, it's horrible for everybody. Mm-hmm. It might be convenient for you. So just having that vector in what as a value, something okay. I try to think about.
Okay. So I have time for two more questions for you now. My next question is that, you know, you have achieved a lot. There's so much more that is waiting to be achieved. At your current stage of life, what does success mean to you?
I wish there was an easy answer, but I'm going to simplify at least from the way I'm seeing it right now. I feel like at this point, if I can do something that creates a legacy for me, that is success to me. So mm-hmm. being remembered for something is probably the closest definition to success. Okay. I don't hope to be buried, but like whatever gets written on my tombstone, if I'm working on that right now, I think that's my definition of success.
Fantastic. And my last question, which is really a follow-up to the success question, is that, you know, you keep pushing yourself to doing so many new things. I mean, you know, when I look at you, physician, teacher, author, entrepreneur, corporate leader, who or what inspires you?
I've always been very inspired by true stories of human grit. Mm-hmm. So Milkha Singh, you know, the situations he came from and the kinds of adversities he went through to mm-hmm. to become who he was. Our president, APJ Kalam, you know, our current president, I feel like people who've been on the, you know, my own grandfather was a helper boy in a cloth shop about 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he actually wrote a letter to J.R.D. Tata, I think, or maybe even his father mm-hmm. at that point. And not that they knew each other, but he basically just wrote that I'm a poor boy in this village and I want to be a doctor. Can you send me something? Mm-hmm. And so for the next few years, he got 5 rupees sent to him. And he used that to become a physician and a freedom fighter for India.
Wow.
And he was a very successful politician after that. And I look back at that, and in a short span of 2 generations, my family has become established and I'm where I am. But it was just for the grit of that, you know, young boy 100 years ago who, and more than that, a benevolent soul who gave 5 rupees to a boy every month mm. without knowing him, changed the course of like so many people. Maybe like 50, 60 people are contributing to the world at this point, just because somebody took a chance on someone. So I don't, I mean, like that just like, it makes my heart swell up. Like if I can do that for somebody, it'd be amazing. That
amazing. Maybe, you know, that's a story you should write about someday, but
yeah, actually I, you know, if I could use a minute, I have a nonprofit with Aseem, like who mm-hmm. you've spoken to, called Abhar. Mm-hmm. And the reason we chose the word Abhar was because, I personally am really grateful to the one person who took a chance on my grandfather. So we pay for tuition for young kids so that they can stay in school and do what they're what they can achieve, do what they can do best. So I feel like if there are people out there who want to support us or talk to us, I'd love to Incredible. Meet them and scale Incredible. It up.
Pallav, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. I wish you success in whatever you're doing.
Thank you, Ashutosh. It was, thank you for giving me the opportunity. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the brand called You Videocast and Podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.